It will be hard for me to rise above their attitude and work unaffected by it. Well, I know there's a price. There is so much disapprobation of boundary breakers. She considered the situation. Well, now we've settled that, she went on, after a while. I'll think over how to repel impertinence with some dignity and conviction of superiority, and not merely withdraw, or combat in lower terms and with lower weapons. I know what I'll do. I've a right to my own life. I won't get combative or superior or scornful, I'll get confidential. I'll say, well, I'll tell you. A few times in my life I've seen treasure trove, something that had nothing to do with money, or position, or fame, or anything else I can name, but just a deep, powerful sort of happiness, and possible to obtain too, and I'm going to get it if I search through every law, sacred and profane, until I find it. Wouldn't you like to have it? Wouldn't it be worth living if you got track of it, even if you did make mistakes? Well then, leave me be, I'm exploring. If I find it, I'd let you know. In the meantime I am discovering many byproducts well worth the having, well worth the effort of discovery. We all want happiness, but I don't want the passive kind. I want big, powerful, creative happiness. And I want it all packed up and ready to take with me when I die. That's the way I'll talk to them. I'll just take them into my confidence as to what I'm after. And it's the truth, and that's all there is to it. An excellent attitude of mind, but the invisibles seemed not certain that she even yet understood what she might be up against. You see, they said, everything one does for self, development, awareness, expansion, contact and all the rest, has a certain acceptability to the ego concerned, and nobody objects. But when you reverse that, and begin to insist on outgo, offering something of your own attainment, testing it against the world's resistance and misunderstanding, then you must expect a harder time. It is one thing to have a neat chapel to visit occasionally, and quite another to carry its influence into practical life. And, said I, while an attitude of mind helps fortitude, it does not protect from suffering. Sensitiveness capable of absorbing wisdom through direct impression suffers enormously from the world of combat, the invisibles agreed. For as awareness increases, so does suffering. Because of this, unfortunately, the spiritual aspirant often prefers to seek a sheltered life and become a bystander. Such a person may have an exquisitely sensitized vision, but he is absolutely sterile because of lack of human contact. The bystander probably regards his reaction as one of fastidiousness, but it is really inertia, atrophied force, over-cultivation, loss of productiveness. Betty recurred to a picture they had seemed to be showing her. I want to look at that chap again, she begged. He's quite fascinating, quite exquisite but useless. If he were set in action, so much of him would break or crumble or change. What a pity he couldn't be used. He's such a highly developed specimen. The whole point is, insisted the invisibles, any sensitive person is useless in employing the force of the higher consciousness if he is always vulnerable to the return blows of the world. Suppose he is trying to accomplish something, and everybody begins irrelevant personal attacks, obstructions of all kinds. The minute he becomes susceptible to all that he is automatically shut off from the power current which was going to help him accomplish. You yourself must look out for this. You have gained access to a shining substance. Now you must learn to use it against a lower element superior in quantity. The toughening process which will make your bit of strength available must rest with you. Little by little, in small matters at first, you must learn to protect your mind against the darts and arrows which poison resolution. Hardihood, commented Betty. That is a nice word. It just happened to come around. No suggestions are offered today, concluded the invisibles. The problem is merely stated for your solution. You stand at the crossroads. Either you proceed faintly shadowed by a strange experience, or you strive onward toward a hold on the vitality of spiritual life which will remain unbroken even in your darkest hours. Better think it over, they warned. As I look back, I doubt if the invisibles anticipated that Betty would encounter any considerable degree of criticism among friends and acquaintances because of her interest in psychic development. As a matter of fact, she met almost none. They were testing her only, I'm sure. Very well, the Invisibles told Betty, in effect, when she failed to be impressed by their warnings. If you are really going on with this thing, you must first of all realize that mere assent is not enough. There is, said they, no suction quality to passive willingness. We cannot start things, that part of it is your job, we can merely complement your own effort. And, they added this impressively for Betty's own instruction, it must be done by your own heart desire and not mind desire. They made much of this point, it was all important. It is useless just to sit with mental preparation, said the Invisibles. You must have the soul preparation, too, the spirit, not the letter of the law. As soon as you have yourself established the right condition, we can come. That is why we are trying to go only as fast as you can assure your own grasp and accomplishment. Otherwise we would be taking you from useful things of the world into a no man's land of idle speculative dreaming. This is far from our purpose. When you do not succeed, seek the reason in yourself. Your surface mind may be going through certain evolutions which have no growth or corresponding demand from within. In that case you are not truly seeking, you are apathetically making an appeal which has no power behind it to accomplish. They continued, over many sessions, to return to this concept, and ever the more strongly. Only steadfast determination and striving will bring you the step further you must go. It is all in your hands now. We can do little more than watch you gain this necessary strength before we can help further. That is the law. We may advise and influence, but you must make selection and experiment. Always hold in mind how much depends on arousing yourself. The energy with which you demand of us will measure what you get. It is not the energy of commanding, but of showing the force which begets its complement. It is the energy of measure for measure, given and received. This is all very indefinite to you now, but remember you are experimenting with forces not recognized in your world of sense. What do you mean by unrecognized forces? I demanded. It seemed to me highly desirable to know with what we were supposed to deal, for I was still in somewhat of a doubtful frame of mind. My query caused some hesitation. Let us call the whole a matter of inspirational force, for the sake of giving it a name, was the reply. It comes from a combination of conditions created by the person himself. We only take advantage of this combination. Once a person of his own choice established it, we can act on it. The initial step is your work. We hesitate to use words like soul yearnings, for instance, because in your mind they have a set significance. But the idea is that we cannot work on an unreceptive person in any satisfactory degree. Roughly speaking, the forces we use are emanations from you. They meet complementary forces not your own that unite with them and so open up a further process of creative selection. A little later they summed up very neatly this necessity for more than acquiescence. It is just by determination and faith, said they, that you accomplish the first dirt lift. That manifestation with yourself and by yourself, you must get be. Those who have read the unobstructed universe may find in this last a foreshadowing of the truly great theory of creative selection there set forth. For you gain any response. This is what people do not realize. They don't put any strength into it, and when it will not work at once, they go the other way. You must get that strength for yourself. Another point on which the Invisibles insisted was that Betty must make haste slowly. Do not look on this thing that we want you to do, said they, as something that can be accomplished in a year or two. Think of it as for eternity. You are stronger than we hoped, and we can go faster than we expected, but we dare not strain you too far. A few simple tasks at a time are all we ask. You will soon see the plan and be impatient to go faster, but you must not try to fly until you are sure of your wings. We prefer to keep you a little clipped until we are surer of your endurance. Someday we will take the air together and all your work will be rewarded. Meanwhile, break down your barriers, let in the flood of spirit we are sending to you. Welcome it and feed upon it greedily. Remember every waking moment to be really trying to live according to the few rules we have given. You will understand better as you go along. Above all, they cautioned, do not strain for psychic power, dividing and disintegrating your force. Rather weld together. Hold yourself a responsible being, capable of limitless possibilities, and so lift up your spirit healthy and whole, asking to be stimulated to greater effort. Don't you see? The instant you try to create, to pump up, to reach for definite things, you are in grave danger. You will never get anywhere if you are thinking of what you are going to get. In that case, you would be just a curiosity seeker along with so many other people. Belief in the attainability of higher powers is a legitimate ambition, but such powers must be grown into faithfully. Meanwhile, simply lay bare your problems to the influence of the great expansion, which will bring your solution. This is the only real channel which will bring permanent wholesome psychic influence. It is the safe and open high road. There are other ways, of course, but they are exploration. Chapter 8. The inner citadel. Shrinking from being misunderstood may be only one way of thinking too much of oneself. The first line of attack here, said the invisibles when in due course they did get around to suggestions, has to be in the direction of elimination. And that implies a deliberate inspection of egoism and coming to terms with it. Always you are dealing with the ego. You desire generous and spontaneous blending with other lives, but there is a toughened membrane, call it the ego, which obstructs that blending. Now in place of this toughened membrane of an ego, which can be wounded, and is sadly scarred by contacts with life, we substitute an indestructible self, a self held together by intention, and by cooperation with universal force, a self vastly more flexible, permeable and self-controlled. This substitution of a non-ego self proved to be no mere figure of speech. At the next session the invisibles resumed the discussion. It was in process very simple, they protested. You do withdraw yourself, in a sense. There is in every individual, they told Betty, an inner citadel, a psychic core. It is his enduring center. His seed that will endure. Search yourself, they urged her, for this constant within. And then consciously establish it. You will not find it in your brain, they said. Look for it rather in the region of the heart, or more accurately the intangible sensations that have no organic position. This is the great security, the foundation for any superstructure of effort you may want to build. The first step in control is the recognition of such an inner fortress for protection and refreshment. There is nothing more important than creating this abode of emotional security, spiritual order and demonstrable strength. You see, the great question is, how are you going to stabilize yourself among all the shifting pursuits of the world, the varied points of view, the conflicts and uncertainties? How are you going to reach reality in the midst of them? And the only answer is, first to make within yourself an individual bit of reality over which you have complete jurisdiction. That is your one method of approach to the ultimate attainment of complete reality. A fine blueprint but a large order, thought I. Very simple. For Betty. First you establish the inner citadel, and then establish yourself in it. Then from it, as headquarters, you act. The top layer is much the nicest place to establish yourself, Betty volunteered. You can look at all your troubles, humorously and in proportion, as most objectionable. Mosquitoes, but still as only mosquitoes, and yourself as outlasting them. That's the way to live. Things surge beneath, picking and battering and fuming, but cannot destroy you. The invisibles took it up. As long as you have this inner power, you needn't mind what is battering against you, nor what tools or dynamite are used. Such can be only a surface nuisance. The shell may be scarred, but you have withdrawn the part of you that can be hurt. Take your moments of discord and entanglement, they challenged. How are you going to possess yourself? There is only one way, but you must have prepared it beforehand and practiced it. Let go your hold of everything and withdraw into the magic working center of life within yourself. It is always possible to check your nervous reactions momentarily by suddenly commanding a relaxation, like making yourself stop shivering. Then quickly combine this momentary release with a swift retreat to your inner citadel. Go apart in it and rest the tensions. Stay in peace and quiet of volition, acquiescing in your whole being to the reharmonizing power of your higher consciousness. It is to your ordinary faculties as is an adult's sympathetic mind to a child's troubles. It helps you clarify your vision and gather strength to make your decisions and plan your actions. And, they added, it is a sure refuge when outside pressure threatens really to overwhelm. Then is justified the complete withdrawal for recuperation. Betty caught at this aspect, considering it for some time before reporting it to me. When too weak for aspiration, too sick for effort, she said at last, what would I do to get buoyant again? Huddled down, hating my own darkness, the divine spark imprisoned, held captive, the physical shackled, I don't like it, but what to do? I'll burrow down still further inside myself. I'll lie in close to the divine spark imprisoned there. Weary-hearted, I'll acknowledge my plight. Etchingly I'll unite with the light that I know is there. Nothing else. No expectancy, no hurry. To my quiet relief, even amid aching in harmony, harmony must rush to succor. That sounds pretty abstract, I know, but it really is the process in zero conditions. But, warn the invisibles. Do not forget that if you would progress, you must inevitably go forth again to take your full share of the buffeting of the elements. This, however, does not mean that you are called upon to plunge heedlessly into the muck and mire. Do what comes, bear what comes in natural course, but do not overweight beyond what your serenity is capable of floating. Distinguish between withdrawal and hearty but undamaged living. The session was about over, so Betty did not pursue the subject then, but she caught the point. I am coming out now, said she, and the reality is getting thinner and paler. As I drift away from it, all I can be sure of is that it is not enough to say with great dignity, I withdraw my consciousness. That is no good. A dignified withdrawal from earth frets looks rather silly. Chapter 9 In Flooding Strength. I must confess that the early period of Betty's instruction was a tough one for me. I see now that she was being given the basic foundations, and that some of them, like the inner citadel, for example, had to be given content before they could become practical. But at the time the teaching was, to me, merely a point of view. It was fragmentary, it was vague, it came slowly. For her part Betty was enthusiastic. But she was having the experiences, I wasn't. All I did was to sit there for an hour or so, with pencil and paper, taking down what little there was to take down. A great deal of the time nothing was said by anybody. I patted myself on the back for being so long-suffering. Now I see I might have made a positive contribution through some kind of enthusiasm of my own, but the invisibles themselves realized that this was a good deal to ask on the basis of what was offered me. You are very patient, they told me appreciatively one day, and that is all, they added dryly. My job was distinctly sideline sitter, and recorder, of course. I listened to directions given Betty as to processes unseen by me. Too expectant, not enough relaxed. You are striving so much to make your mind receptive that you defeat our purpose and open your mind to other sources. We have decided on a slight change of plan for you. We are going to make you put in practice as nearly as possible each phase as you acquire it. Roughly the plan is this, we will lead you into our world for your lessons. But in order to obtain any further instruction you must do your practicing at home. We are not trying to lead you away from worldly experience, only to strengthen and enlighten you about it. Open up more naturally, and do not keep such a stern hand on yourself and your emotions. It won't harm you if you go to the opposite extreme for a while until balance is gained. Now try to regulate your breathing, several short quick breaths and a long one, and then let go. One after the other. When you breathe, do not strain for anything. Try to forget that part. Just go in and out with the tide. We are putting you through a time of slow preparation. And you are not standing still, as you think. At present you are necessarily muscle-bound in your mind with too much effort. Push. Push through as you would in walking against a strong wind. That sort of thing. Stage directions. Of a drama that I, in the wings, could not see. Once in a long while the invisibles toss me something personal, a bit of evidential, a brief explanation. As a fish is tossed to a trained seal. Betty herself realized that her reports back were incomplete. Are these words right? She asked me, rather anxiously. They did not get laid just right. Words. 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 She cried, exasperated. We have to string boundaries of them around even the dimmest comprehension. And more is there than can ever be contained. But right then the invisibles apparently did not care whether or not there was any mental comprehension in either of us. They weren't interested in our minds. Minds came in later, they assured us. It is the amateur method to seek growth or spiritual freedom, said they, by an intense concentration of mind, but this must be replaced by expansion of the heart. That re-establishes the proportion of spirit over the material, and welds the being into a new functioning body capable of volition. There is a great difference between the terrible diffusions of seeking occult power and the expansion of the heart which arranges your proportions and makes you a workable reality. You are past the first danger posts. Do not wonder at silences on our part. Daily strengthening of purpose by silent contemplation of your intention, that is what we have been trying to lead you to, not to daily seeking for adventure. Nevertheless, even I could perceive certain definite steps of instruction. The first thing Betty was to accomplish was permeability to the invisible spiritual forces, or contact with the source. The result of this was to be spiritual consciousness. At first she gained it only in touches, flashes. Next she must extend the duration of spiritual consciousness until it became habitual. Once she was able to transfer her headquarters for living from her old limited Earth consciousness to this expanded consciousness, she must learn how to utilize her new vantage point, and her new powers and insight, in her ordinary conduct of life and her relations to the people about her. That, stripped of all technique, was the program. And its emphasis on mundane utilization, the immediate application to life, not to some impractical mysticism, gave it common sense to me. The ultimate aim. The fashioning of Betty as an instrument for work after she had left Earth life, was not then apparent to us. None of this burst upon Betty all at once, as an illumination. The idea and the practice of contact was introduced to her gradually, as one might teach a beginner to swim. One day she had been quiet for much longer than usual. I began to get restless. "What are you up to?" I demanded at last. "Getting porous," Betty replied. "Porosity." She paused to savor this, then chuckled. "That's a nice fat juicy word. It sucks in and out. When you are cold and enter a room, a warm room, you say to yourself that you are in a different atmosphere, and instantly expand to it. That is the difference between ordinary life and the element I'm in." "What element?" I tried for even a glimpse of understanding. "It's a new medium of sensation," she explained. "The most relaxing and yet vigorous state you can imagine, so abounding in beauty and vitality. It's too wonderful for me to grasp just yet. Can't you tell me more of this new medium? Could you imagine a substance made out of spring?" she replied. "Not of individual fresh willows and buds and blossoms and tender greens and bursting colors, not those details. But the very sweep of an entire world decked out, the substance of spring. Don't you see how fresh, delicious, exciting, exalting it would be compared to ordinary things? I am in this superlative beauty and freshness and exquisite delicacy. It is hard to describe in clumsy terms, or name anything but just the substance of spring," which sounded pleasant and poetic. But those were the days when I was pragmatic and still somewhat skeptical. For satisfaction I wanted both reasons and results. Nevertheless, I held my fire and awaited developments. Much instruction followed, whose purpose I fathomed not at all. "For example, we would like you," the invisibles speaking through Betty told her, "to cultivate to the utmost your instinct for beauty, form, poems, anything that has been achieved by man in his brief moments of triumph and contact with the Oversoul. It is the biggest uplifting material thing you can possess. Do not be afraid to drink deep of beauty. It is an open door through which you can glimpse what is to come. Beauty, all that is harmony and in opposition to discord. Beauty is a great and quiet teacher. Detailed education is very important, but it is beset with many restrictions and pitfalls. It is a wise teacher who keeps his pupils looking at the end of the vista instead of watching their feet on the narrow path they walk." To me, sitting on the sidelines, that sounded a good deal like urging Betty to be Betty. But day after day they kept her at whatever lay behind their words. Beauty and love, They insisted. You hear us say love so often that the word ceases to convey any idea to you, but it is the all-containing, permeating essence which will unite your world to ours. We wish we had another word for it. But we see it as the first principle of growth. Open the floodgates, let the great current of the universe pour through you to others, if you would live. Much of Betty's instruction was given in this mood of poetic imagery. Again the invisibles would express themselves in what seemed to me more practical terms. Don't try for anything, said they on one occasion, but just the feeling of a substance as physically permeating as ether or gas or something like that. Try simply, in relaxing, to feel that this substance permeates every inch of your body. Accustom yourself to the feel of it. You will find it will rest you and bring happiness even in the very beginning. You have tried it before, but this will visualize it. Do it at any time, momentarily. It's an actual fact, this inlet of strength. There was a pause, evidently for experiment. Anybody could do it, said Betty presently. It is a matter of fact law. I don't see anything psychic about it. I am just studying the law, and little by little I am demonstrating it. The biggest thing you can study is this permeating strength, and how much of it you can take. I lie here and strive according to the poor little rules I have discovered already, and something like a slight chemical change takes place that makes me aware of my own possibility. I am just a poor feeble beginner, but I can see so much ahead. Here are the only tasks we give you now, concluded the invisibles. First, love, attract unselfishly. Second, as we told you before, walk through your days as a creature with folded wings, conscious of the possession of another element and of your ability to enter it. Third, Eve enough in spirit to invite inspiration, and act promptly without questioning on what comes to you. For a while Betty seemed to be considering this. Then she said, I feel like Columbus after weeks and weeks of travel, holding fast to the faith that it's there on the other side. I mustn't relax that faith. Betty's faith was not ill-founded. But also its fulfillment was not immediate. Other things in her makeup delayed matters for a time. Notably caution. Betty was far from being credulous or an easy mark. Her long line of Scotch ancestors had given her a certain hard-headed skepticism. At the time it seemed to me a mighty useful trait in this kind of a job. It still does. But also its use could be overdone. The invisibles pointed this out. Don't be afraid to accept your dreamland, they advised her. You have enough ingrained practical habits to bring you back to balance whenever necessary, but unless you let go your present control you will never be able to do our work. The fact that you have that control is your greatest asset if you can turn it off at will and control it. Do you see what we are doing? Step by step we are trying to break the bonds which tick you down to your earthly village and help you to enter the wider world we live in. Yes, it is like getting you off sticky flypaper. You want to do it, but you must conquer your bodily instincts and habits first. You have the imagination and control, but the abandon must be acquired. Betty must have been able to obey orders, for shortly she reported, I'm being taken along with some strong ones. Their association invigorates me so. I am going through some kind of an experience on a higher level. Before, I was like a little skinny chickabiddy thing that refused to come out of its shell, crouched in its little shell because that was all it knew that was comfortable. Now someone is helping me to step bravely out and I am feeling strong and sure. And not regretting the sacrifice of my shell. You can have little conception now of the intense happiness toward which you are progressing, the invisibles encouraged her. We don't want to entice you with statements that, misconceived, would endanger a simple approach to the reality. But no inner vision must ever have a wall instead of a horizon. For some little time Betty was silent. Then she announced, I've always before stuck my head up through a hatchway and tried to look around, but now I've climbed up. I'm all here but I don't know what to do. She chuckled. This is a great game, I tell you what. Like a fairy story. My, but this is the life. Again she was silent. Well, I've got to do something about it now. I can't just stand and say how nice it is. All the old ideas and sensations underfoot. as though I had taken off my clothes and were standing on them ready to swim. But what'll I do?
Never mind, said the Invisibles, just go on.
You must have brought me here for some reason, Betty insisted,